No, it's moving. We're good. Go ahead.
It's a lot like the truck that I had growing up on the shovel and stuff. Over there.
Oh, my God. Did you do this something? What time is it?
7:02.
My mic is on.
You just turned it off.
Okay.
Two plates.
It was wrong to begin with, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So,
good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Borough of Roosevelt Council meeting of March 20th, 2023 at 7:03 p.m. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 6, 2023, which is posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Robert Atwood?
Here.
Mr. Lou Ethicoff? Absent. Mr. Michael Hamilton?
Here.
Ms. Constance Herstrom?
Here.
Mr. Stephen Mocker?
Here.
And Mr. Joseph Trammell?
Here.
And Mayor Peggy Malkin?
Here. Okay. Just want to say a few words to open the meeting. Happy spring, everyone. Turned spring at 5:27 this afternoon. I think we all know it's been a very, very rough few weeks in Roosevelt. We had the tragic fire, and since then we had three different deaths of people who were too young to die and an important part of our community. So I just want to just express how really heartbroken and sorry we all are. And the council, the whole town, it's just been very, very sad. So hopefully now that it's spring, we'll turn a corner and we won't have any more just, you know, terrible events. This has just been a very, very rough few weeks. So I'd like to ask for a motion to go out of order so that we can have presentation by Ron Mondello. He doesn't have to sit through our whole meeting.
Actually, Mayor, he is. You don't have to.
Because I just have him on there. Okay.
I just have him on there.
So I'd like to introduce Ron Mondello, and he's a municipal attorney for cannabis law, cannabis discussion. Ron, do you want to just tell us a few words about yourself and what you do?
I've got some slides. So
There's about 76
slides. We're getting through them in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Evelyn Wood's speed. I mean, Evelyn Wood's slide presentation.
Thank you.
Do you know him?
Maybe you three can swing your chair because
it's
behind you.
I'm sure most positive views in the Institute of Local Government Attorneys Group.
Just be careful with these wires. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate that. I am a member of the New Jersey State of League of Municipalities, the New Jersey Institute of Local Government Attorneys. I am a trustee with these folks. This is a presentation for municipalities on the adult use, personal use, recreational cannabis. In addition to that, I am a member of the New Jersey State Bar, the Cannabis Law Special Committee since 2018, and in the lifeline of cannabis, quite frankly, that's a long time. I am the co-chair of the Cannabis Municipal Land Use section of the New Jersey State Bar. That is my card. This is my website. If you ever have any questions, there's a whole bunch of videos, and I just love to talk about municipal cannabis, so you're welcome to call my cell phone at any time. So I represent Jersey City, Hoboken, Atlantic City, Oakland, I think that's Maywood, yes, Hightstown, Asbury Park. I was a councilman in two towns, and both Kinnelon and Fairlawn. I have no idea if cannabis is right for Roosevelt. I don't live here. I don't govern here. That decision is up to you folks. But some guiding post or mile markers might be as follows. I did a presentation for Chatham and Morris County. They are a bedroom community. They are flush with cash. They have no vacancies. Why on earth would they ever want cannabis? On the other hand, Parsippany is, quite frankly, in dire financial straits. They have a tremendous amount of vacancies, and they are far from a bedroom community. So it makes sense for them. It does not make sense for Chatham, and you'll decide whether or not it makes sense for Roosevelt. I was a borough attorney, zoning and planning board attorney, zoning and planning board member for at least a decade. My son says it's really important that you know which groups I like. The Allman Brothers would be first. In fact, this Saturday I'm going to see Trouble No More, which is an Allman Brothers cover band, and then second would be the Grateful Dead. So here's the views on, they still use marijuana, but cannabis. We're at 68% across the United States. That certainly will be at 100% within the next couple of years. These are the folks that decide whether or not a cannabis business will... Am I blocking you? Okay. Whether or not a cannabis business in New Jersey will get a license. This is the chair. This is the vice chair. And for whatever reason, I happen to love Mr. Barker because he votes no on everything. I'm not sure why, but everything's a no vote. Now, how did this legislation get passed? There are 564 municipalities in New Jersey and 482 in California. It got passed because home rule. It has always been home rule in New Jersey. It will always be home rule. There will never be a cannabis business coming into Roosevelt unless you decide that there should be. If you decide that there shouldn't, it will never happen. It's home rule. You keep 1,000% control. So if you do decide who should be involved, well, certainly council members, construction and planning and zoning officials. In fact, I would encourage, if you do decide that this is something you want to investigate, perhaps local businesses, schools, law enforcement, some citizens, and then, of course, your law department needs to be involved. You can't see this. I did give your clerk a copy of this. If you do decide that you want to venture into cannabis, here are a number of things that you should look at and make policy decisions. I wouldn't have the time to go into this, but the first one is class of licenses, and we're going to go into that very quickly. You may decide that you want one class of license or six different classes, and there are six. And there's actually an outlier, which we're going to speak about in a minute. So class one is cultivation. They grow, they cultivate, produce. That's what it looks like. It could be indoor, outdoor. Many towns require that it be indoor for a number of reasons. Safety, and then, of course, many of the cannabis businesses want it to be indoor so they can grow 12 months out of the year as opposed to three. A manufacturer essentially takes the raw cannabis and turns it into a number of different products, whether it's a tincture, a gummy, et cetera. Wholesalers, these gentlemen are asking for 100 of these, 1,000 of these, et cetera, et cetera. A distributor distributes in bulk cannabis to other cannabis companies. And this, of course, is, I guess, the most popular, the most sexy would be a class five retail establishment. That's what they typically look like. And I do get a lot of questions from governing bodies, and I don't blame them. They don't want to put such a business on Main Street because they don't want soccer moms, et cetera, with their kids walking by. So I've said, well, maybe you want to think about putting in your industrial zone. People will drive almost anywhere to get weed these days. It is what it is. Just some quick myth busters. Many governing bodies are concerned that it's going to bring in a certain element. I should really get rid of this picture because I look like that guy. They think it's going to be a blight on the neighborhood, a bad influence on children, queuing of all hours. I would suggest that you have your chief of police speak to some of the other towns, and it's probably about 35.
We just use the state police.
Oh, okay.
Here.
Well, in any event, you will not see these problems. I have not seen these problems, and I have been at the center of this since 2018. This is more like what they look like, regardless of where they are. They are a very decent-looking retail stores, and I have found them in industrial zones, and some governing bodies have decided to keep it on Main Street. I'm the Jersey City Cannabis Control Board attorney. We just approved 50 Now, in my opinion, that is not sustainable, but I don't live there, I don't govern there. So there's a Class 6 license, which essentially is a business that is just made up of cars and trucks. They will go and pick up different cannabis products from several different dispensaries and then deliver to your residence. In fact, even if you remain opted out, if there are any geographically close towns that have opted in, they are allowed to deliver to your residents, your constituents, 24/7, and you cannot do anything about it. It is preempted by state law. I had a mayor tell me, I'm not going to allow cannabis in my town. I'm going to put a police officer around the perimeter. I said, Mayor, you're going to probably get indicted and lose the next election. You cannot do that. It's preempted by state law. Well, let's hope that if there is deliveries, it doesn't look like this thing. Here is an outlier, which I'm a big proponent of, and most municipalities don't want. Why? Because there's no revenue. You don't get the 2%. But this is the testing labs, the cannabis testing labs. Have you read the paper about fentanyl? It's even in cannabis these days. We want to make sure that who is ever using, and hopefully it's 21 and older, using cannabis, it doesn't have pesticides, it doesn't have metals, it has the right THC content, and God forbid, it doesn't have this awful drug, fentanyl. All right, we're not getting into that. Just very quickly, a micro business is a scaled-down version of classes 1 through 6. There are severe limitations. You can't have more than 10 employees, not more than 2,500 square feet, never more than 1,000 cannabis plants. This was the legislature's way of getting the small guy and gal into the business. So if there were folks in Roosevelt that live here, and that's one of the requirements. You either live here or it's in one of the bordering towns where you apply. The barriers to entry are much, much less. The capital is much, much less. All right. So here is the there are two types of licenses, but at the end of the day, they all boil down to one. I could file what's known as a conditional license. I wouldn't need this governing body support. I could just simply file. Many towns have a cannabis control board, planning board. Then it goes to the municipal council for a resolution of support. So I could apply with the state, but then I would have 120 days to get the all-important resolution of support from the municipal council. And if I didn't get that, my license would fall off a cliff. And please stop me. I know some of this stuff can get a little bit heavy. I'm happy to answer any and all questions through the mayor. All right, so the next application is an annual. Here, I couldn't apply to the state unless I got the all-important resolution of support from this governing body, and then I could apply to the state. Even a conditional must be converted to an annual within 120 days. So that's the process. We're not going to get into these time frames. This is a very important slide. This really is a two-tier process. Again, it resides with the governing body. This is the most important piece of the puzzle. The CRC will never approve a state cannabis license without a resolution of support from this governing body or any governing body. Local licensing, no need to reinvent the wheel. You already probably have a significant licensing scheme or ordinances. You would simply want to tweak that and make sure that there is an annual fee associated with the renewal. I have seen everything from $500 to $25,000. It's all over the place. So the municipality may create its local licensing or endorsement. We know that. Let's forget that. So here are the cannabis statutes in a nutshell. You can enact ordinances that are not in conflict with the CREMA statute. You can govern the number of cannabis establishments, but again, not delivery to your town. It's preempted by the state. If I'm in an adjoining town or geographically close, I can deliver 24/7. You can't do anything about it. You can govern the location, manner, times of operation. This is a big one with me. Established civil penalties. Many of the towns, unfortunately, are experiencing gifting. And there are these bud vans all over the place in West Milford. And it's illegal, but they are saying, I will sell you this bottle of water for $50, and then I get a quarter ounce of cannabis. I'm giving it to you for free. So it's a loophole. And don't expect any of the police officers to enforce any of that stuff. The laws have been changed so drastically that it's dangerous for them to actually arrest folks involved with cannabis unless it's 25 pounds. All right, municipality may impose a separate local licensing. We went over that. So one of the reasons that the New Jersey League of Municipalities, who was advised by the New Jersey Institute of Local Government Attorneys, of which I'm a trustee, I'm old, but guys 20 years older than me told the league to tell everyone to opt out, opt out. We don't know what the regulations are going to look like, so everybody opt out. Well, this is no epiphany. The regulations essentially mirror the statutes that we just went over. All right, so if you do decide, we want to look at some land use issues. If you're permitting it, make it feasible. You don't want to say that, well, the cannabis establishments have to be 10,000 linear feet from each other. Otherwise, you will zone it into inutility. Are you going to make it a permitted use or a conditional use? This is usually what almost every municipality does. You want to consider micro businesses, the number of licenses, and there needs to be substantial legislation in your ordinances about code enforcement. Not going to go over this. This is the and I'll make this presentation available to anybody who wants it. But this is the process I put together for Hoboken. This is the process I put together for Jersey City. One of the things that Jersey City did, and I'm not suggesting that happen here, even if you decide to opt in, the business administrator and the clerk, they were getting 30 calls a day. Is my property or is this address located in the green zone? They put together this interactive map where you just punch in the address and it would say yes or no, eliminating all those phone calls. Some best practices, if you do decide you want to set up a web page, maybe a map that shows the zones, maybe not interactive. You may want to think about, if you do get a number of applicants, how you're going to score them. You want to put together a frequently asked question. Don't reinvent the wheel. I must have spent half a dozen hours on Jersey City's just lift it. Somebody in the municipality should be designated as handling the cannabis applications. And this is the most important bullet here. If you decide to opt in and there are a number of applications and documents that you want these cannabis businesses to submit, they are not operable. You cannot, if somebody sends in an OPA request, you cannot submit those documents, their business plans, their security plans. You may be able to, depending on what your application looks like, you may have to retract some stuff if there's security in there, but probably just the application is operable, nothing else. All right, so the only thing that I'll talk about here, which I had a discussion with Peggy about, is that you're not allowed to have a cannabis cultivation on farmland assessed property. Now, if it's simply farmland assessed and there is no deed in preservation, there is no easement in preservation with the state, well, whoever owns that property just simply doesn't submit the exemption to the tax assessor that year. It's no longer farmland assessed. And they could then have cultivation on their premises. I did a presentation for Alamuchi. They have a ton of corn fields, and they are not flush with cash. And this was something that got them very excited. All right, so what are some of the limitations? You can't be in a grocery store, deli, no indoor food markets. You can't be involved with any type of retail food. And, of course, no alcoholic beverages associated with it. Once again, it's repetitive, but it's the most important slides. You must have a resolution from the governing body that basically says a determination that the town has authorized this class of license sought by the applicant. And if you put a limitation, let's say 3, we need not see resolution number 4. Number 3 does it and closes or shuts down the game. I get about 5 calls a week from zoning officials, construction code officials. I'm not going to give this cannabis business a zoning letter. I have to wait for the planning board. No, this letter is required. Your zoning official must do it. It simply says this. This particular property for this particular class is zoned appropriately. It's 2 lines, 3 lines at the most. So how does the municipality handle a cannabis zoning? Well, we want to look at odor, location, schools, parks, other cannabis facilities, signage, neighborhood impact, security. This is big. Prohibiting sales to minors, consumption on the premises, traffic. This one is also very big. We're going to talk about it in a minute, and then trash disposal. So here is the revenue that can be generated from the various cannabis businesses, cultivator, manufacturer, wholesaler, cannabis retailer, and you'll see that there is no line there for, in my opinion, one of the most important, a cannabis testing facility. This is based on gross receipts, not net profit, gross receipts. I hate this slide, but I've been asked by 24 governing bodies to put something together, so I'm shooting from the hip here. There's a lot of factors that come into play here. How many other retails are in surrounding neighborhoods, or I should say surrounding towns? Same thing with cultivation, same thing with manufacturing. But these are estimates. An average retail will gross 9 to 12 million. You'll get about 180 to almost a quarter million, and that's 1,500 to 3,000 square feet. Cultivation, this is a small cultivation, 15,000 square feet. Generates about 12 million to 15 million per year. It takes about a year and a half or 2 years to actually ramp up. And in fact, half the crop almost always dies the first year. But it'll generate between a quarter million and 300. Manufacturing, this is typically 15,000 square feet as well. It'll generate 20 million to 25 million gross for about 400 to a half a million a year. Here is what I consider to be some other important things other than money. Most towns require that the cannabis businesses hire a certain amount of local residents. Jersey City wants 75%. And show me why you couldn't find 75% in such a big city. Local businesses, there will be an increase in sales for local businesses, patrons that come to dispensaries. Positive community impact. These cannabis businesses are required to show and make a positive community impact through education, donations, expungement clinics, volunteerism, and commercial vacancies, if there are any, would significantly decrease in those vacancies. And builds out will certainly increase assessed value. Alright, so I don't know if you do decide to opt in. I'm not sure whether you get 10 applications, 5 applications, only you know that, but some of the bigger cities that have gotten hundreds of applications, you couldn't possibly vet those. They couldn't possibly vet those. Some of their meetings go to 1 a.m. as it is. So they establish a cannabis review board. Understand that this is advisory only. They don't make the decision. They sift through those applications and say, Mayor, Council, we think Ron Mondello's cannabis business cultivation is not a good fit for Roosevelt, or it is, et cetera, et cetera. Do you need a board? If you have the bandwidth and you're only going to get 3 applications, I think the governing body would want to hear those. And if it's the opposite, you would not. Decisions, how many members, certainly want somebody from the public, who appoints them, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, record keeping, if there is a board, it's very similar to your zoning and planning board. There needs to be either a audio recording or a transcript, or somebody needs to keep minutes of those meetings. All right, this is what I wanted to talk about, host community agreements. So this is just our appellate division saying they don't have a problem with these host community agreements. Fancy words for this. I am a cannabis business, and I'm coming into town, and it is a contract after you've decided, not before. We don't want this to be quid pro quo. A contract between the governing body and the cannabis business to give back to the community. And some of the things that they should be giving back, well, you know, that 2%, are you going to trust that the cannabis business just simply gives you a number? I wouldn't. So either the CFO is going to have to audit them, or if the CFO is too busy, perhaps a third party. And the taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for this stuff. It should be the cannabis businesses that reimburses you for every single dime. There may be some police need to go out there. Your construction code official may have to go out there more than once. The taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook. The town should be reimbursed by the cannabis business. Some other things that should go in that agreement. The applicant to sponsor a job fair, attract local residents, perhaps a labor protection agreement, community education. They have to agree to provide community education. I've seen this often, provide state matching funds for municipalities' drug and alcohol prevention. contributions to local charities, schools, first responders, police, fire, first aid, digital divide organizations, participate in community cleanup and volunteerism. In Jersey City, we had three companies say, we're going to have four employees, and every single one will donate 50 paid hours a year to Jersey City. This is what it can't be. It cannot be a money grab. Buy us a new rec center or four street sweepers, and we'll give you the resolution of support. In fact, this agreement should be done after you've said yes, not before. It can't be give us this and we'll act favorably. So what are the things with a community host agreement? Well, I don't know, even if it's negotiated fairly, the cannabis business's attorney may run into court and say, "Judge, no other business has to do this. Why does my client have to do this?" And my response would be, well, first of all, you guys are big boys, big gals. You negotiated this in fair faith. It was an arm's-length transaction with the governing body. And this is not like any other business. What other business can you get a 2% VIG from? There's no such thing. This is a unique, highly regulated business. Therefore, some of the rules don't apply. I'm seeing a lot of litigation. There's already 8 or 10 lawsuits that I stay on top of. One of the things I try to do is, and it's typically, let's say you've got two licenses and you've had three applicants apply. Well, the third applicant will typically sue you and the two applicants that you gave the resolution of support to. Well, I try to put something in that host community agreement that those two other cannabis companies will indemnify the borough and pay for the defense. The taxpayer should not be on the hook for this stuff. So if you do decide to go this way, I always suggest require some level of site control, even if it's a letter of intent, and change the ordinances to require notice to residents within 200 feet, something to think about. I know the planning board and zoning board requires this, but if a cannabis establishment is moving into my neighborhood, I'd like to know about it, and this is one way to make sure residents know about it. It's due process at its finest. Your ordinances will have to speak of this host community agreement if that's the way you want to go. And again, a cannabis board or a planning board, they vet the cannabis businesses. They don't make any decisions. The planning board does. But with respect to your resolution of support, if you did have a cannabis board, it's advisory only. Okay. Should there be an appeal process? I always suggest that because give the cannabis businesses a second bite at the apple, and maybe the governing body hears their whining as to why they weren't picked and why they should be picked. You may have been asked in the past for letters of support. I'm not sure, but they have no place in this adult use market. And then your licensing process should be annual. Why do you want to keep tabs on the applicant? They said they were going to do all these things. Are they doing it? Are they complying? And that annual license renewal will correct any deficiencies. I hate to put this up. Everybody knows this, but don't solicit anything of value from the cannabis businesses. And this is individual council folks. And the cannabis businesses shall not offer anything of value. I would, if you do decide to opt in, you're going to get a lot of phone calls, folks that want to take you out to dinner, talk to you. I would just say no. Do it through the borough attorney. Get on the agenda. We'll give you 10 minutes to present and the story. This is the worst statute I've ever seen in my life. Our legislature simply took the casino statute. They cut and pasted. Ironically, they gave state senators, state assemblymen, and lawyers an exemption. But if you decide to opt in, and you certainly cannot have a cannabis business here or anywhere else in the state, which makes no sense. Even your planner on the planning board, if you've opted in and his wife wants to open up a cannabis business in Jersey City, she cannot. It's the dumbest statute I've ever seen. But you can't have an interest in a cannabis business anywhere. And of course, ironically, attorneys were left out, state senators and assemblymen were all left out. Litigation, happy to talk about this, what some of the judges are doing, what some of the judges aren't doing. I'm seeing that they don't particularly like application scoring, because if one council person or member of the Cannabis Review Board gives a 10 and the other gives a 0, why? I want to see your resume, and why was there such a disparity? On the other hand, the judges are giving you wide discretion. If you pick this person, this cannabis business versus the other five, because they're going to do manufacturing, they're going to do cultivation at the same location, that's very reasonable to basically say no to the other five. Wide discretion. It's called medical versus adult recreation. I'm not going to spend any time. Other than medical patients can get up to 3 ounces for 30 days. Adult users can only get an ounce a day, but there's no 30-day limitation, so they can simply buy every single day. All right, thank you. I'm sorry if I took up too much of your time. I'm going to shut this off, my mic, and see if there are any questions. Thank you very much for the invitation again.
Anything else? Can we step up to the microphone? Yeah. We can see it. So I'll open it to the council first. Does anyone on the council have anything they'd like to ask or talk to Ron about? Okay. I'll ask the question first. I've been told that when it's grown, I can't speak for everyone. I think we were mostly focusing on agriculture here, but
right.
So I've heard that when it's grown in the hoop buildings or the greenhouses, that the lights are very bright and on 24 hours a day.
Yeah, so I would suggest you not go down the road of hoop houses. I would make sure that they are enclosed buildings, whether they are aluminum or whatever other structure, to make sure that there is no lights. And you need a great deal of security because you know what gets stolen? The lights. Nobody cares about the pot plants. They want the lights.
What?
Really?
They're extraordinarily expensive.
Yeah.
Wow. Several million dollars. Yeah, not a micro.
So there's no covering? Someone said there could be coverings over the hoops, like black coverings, so that you don't see.
It's up to you folks, but I would shy away from hoop houses.
Okay.
I think it's going to cause more problems than it's worth.
Okay.
Again, we're looking at probably cultivation and maybe manufacturing here. Who measures, who weighs the crop? Who, that sort of a thing.
Excellent.
You're going to get 2%. Who weighs it? Is there a chain of custody? Do they have barcodes from seed to seal? There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, so you are not going to be, you're going to have to trust the cannabis business to say, we sold $15 million. Now, a good municipal auditor will be able to figure out whether or not that number is accurate. So, they've got to open their books and dive in. But if you decide to take that route, make sure that cannabis business reimburses that municipal auditing firm. In fact, I had the same issue in Reddington. They were saying, well, even though we just sold $15 million of cannabis, well, we sold them to three dispensaries that we own, so we shouldn't have to pay any tax. That's incorrect.
Right.
So, but, you know, and they gave them $80,000 instead of $500,000. I got involved. We're getting the $500,000.
Okay. On odor also?
Excellent question. So HVAC, I don't think, is enough. You really need folks in white lab coats to go in there, measure the terpenes in the air. That's the stuff that comes off the plants. And make sure that either scrubbers are installed. Can be expensive, but it can be eliminated, but it's costly, and make them do it.
And the noise from these scrubbers? They're big fans.
You know, the technology has gotten to be so sophisticated that the noise is really... Listen, you don't want this next to a residential neighborhood, right? But the noise is inconsequential.
Yeah.
Okay. And in fact, the state law is the odor can't leave the property line.
It's an interesting concept, because as they ripen, they stink to high heaven.
They do. But there is, the technology has gotten very sophisticated. And we've had cannabis businesses that, you know, wanted to spend this much money on HVAC, and we made them spend this much money. I mean, several hundred thousand dollars to make sure that they get it right. And, you know, the bigger companies, they have no problem with those types of expenses. They just need to be pushed.
What are the other problems with hoop houses?
As the mayor mentioned, and I've never had any experience with them, but I see most towns don't want them, and I guess they don't want them because they're somewhat fragile, and you can see the lights. Some towns are doing outdoors or an enclosed structure, period. That's what I'm seeing.
So an enclosed structure is like an Amazon warehouse, smaller sort of a thing.
I've seen that some that are 150. Somebody took over a Walmart.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But could it be like a typical, like a quintessential greenhouse type? Can we regulate that?
It could.
Because I can't imagine anyone here would want anything that looked like a warehouse at all. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I think we all have a similar mindset. We never want to see a warehouse.
Well, some of the buildings are very attractive. They really are. But, I mean, you guys decide if you go down that route, what you want. I mean, if you want hoop houses, you can do that. If you want ones that simply look like, you know, garden fixtures outdoors, well, that's what it'll look like. Yeah. What else?
Once we opt in, we can't opt out.
Bingo. So I just had Oakland. I represent Oakland. And they had a different council person was elected, and he was able to convince that they had opted in. And he was able to convince the rest of the council that this is evil stuff. and they asked me to repeal. Cannot. Now, there's always a different way to skin the cat. You can change the zoning ordinances to make it so restrictive that you have essentially zoned it into inutility. And that's what they're doing. But you cannot repeal it for 5 years.
Now, if you went towards a micro-solution and wanted to spool it up later on, found out, okay, this is working well for us, is that easy enough to do, or is that...
We're going to switch places. Great question. After a year, if the micro-business can show that demand far exceeds supply, and that's going to be that way for a couple years in New Jersey, after a year, they can grow, but not without your permission.
Hightstown opted in?
Yes.
For cultivation or sale?
Cultivation, manufacturing, and retail, but in a very specific area. A very specific area that I believe is just the industrial zone.
Okay. I think our attorney is Greg Cannon.
I'm an ILGA member, so I get your email updates.
Sorry about that.
No, they're awesome. I've been reading the litigation updates and looking up the cases for a couple months now. The question I had was kind of the converse of what the question Steve had, which is, by making the ordinance, like this town has opted out, but by making the ordinance less restrictive, you really don't have, the only class of claimants is potentially a citizen objector versus, because the statute doesn't really say you can make it less restrictive. It says you can't change it for 5 years.
No, you can always change your zoning ordinances. You cannot repeal the ordinance. The one that you've opted out, if you opt in, you cannot repeal that opting in. But you can always change your...
That was my question, or that makes it less restrictive. But, excuse me, he asked you...
You can make it more restrictive, you can make it less restrictive.
But that opt-out decision can be changed to opt-in?
Of course.
Are you aware of any citizens or anyone who's brought in a case to challenge the opt-in?
Sure. Very rich people that don't want cannabis in their town. They're all losing. It's here. Okay. They're all losing. Okay. Yeah.
That was my only concern.
Yeah. I'll send you the case. It's very, very interesting.
What town is it in Chicago? It's
probably up north. Amwell?
Out in Morris County, yeah.
Isn't that Hopewell,
that area? Not Hopewell. West Amwell's out by, like, Mine Hill.
Yeah.
It's Hunterdon County. It's Hunterdon.
Hunterdon.
I never know when I cross that.
It's like near Flemington.
It's sketchy out there.
It's like Flemington, that really area, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's expensive litigation, and it's a wild case. Because the planner who worked for the municipality decided to jump ship and represent the cannabis business while it was still going on.
Oh, that's Hunterdon County. Might be the only planner up there.
Anyway.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's great. And thank you very much. Please keep your emails coming.
All right. Anything else?
Anyone else? Anything? Okay.
Can people come
out? Well, yeah, so I was going to... sort of go out of our general process and ask if anyone in the audience would like to ask anything? Maureen, you want to come to the mic, Maureen?
I typically speak loud enough that I don't need a microphone.
You're a litigator.
Not really. I don't like to litigate.
Okay, Maureen Parrott, 2 Tamara Drive. Okay, I have questions about lawsuits. What if, we're surrounded by a very wealthy area, Millstone Township. Can somebody from another municipality sue? They don't like the smell? Can they sue? Are there any, I mean, obviously anybody can sue anybody, but is there any successful basis for suing if they don't like the smell? They don't like the opt-in, you said? But can a non-resident challenge the opt-in? Can a non-resident sue? They don't like the smell. They don't approve of it. Or their lights. They don't like the police. Whatever they don't like.
Yeah, so anybody can sue. It's another milestone whether or not they win.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not sure that somebody far away from the town would have standing to say, I don't want this in a town that I don't even live in. I don't think they would have standing. And the judge would say, why don't you stick to your own town? But I stay on top of the litigation, but I'm not a litigator. So, yeah.
But they're,
people.
Like the line,
we're surrounded by
the line. You typically have to be, he was right, you typically have to be a resident affected, like, so they're not, residents of Millstone are not subject to the ordinance that's being challenged.
If they did a 200-foot search, they went to the planning board.
Well, that would be a different animal.
Oh,
if it was within 200 feet of Millstone, then there'd be different basis for jurisdiction.
We are.
But Ms. Barrett has indeed identified the most likely objectors in the area.
Who will sue? The wealthy people. But are you aware of any kind of successful litigation by non-residents challenging whatever they don't like about the cultivation?
Yeah. So I have not seen any successful ones. I've seen failures. In the federal court, I don't know if you're familiar with the New Jersey weed man, Eddie Forshawn.
Yes.
He doesn't like the idea. And he coined the phrase... the Caucasian cannabis cartel, because in his opinion, all these cannabis businesses are going to rich white old guys. So he sued in federal court and he got crushed. And he's going to sue in state court and he'll get crushed again.
Well, I'm not surprised federal. I work for the federal court. That I'm not surprised. I work past history. But so the lawsuit, is it within the power of the municipality to have a referendum on whether to issue a license?
Of course. I don't live here. I don't govern here. I've seen referendums on should we opt in. I've seen informal polling and surveys that were sent to residents.
We did that
and
a couple of years ago. It was 2-1 in favor of a business here.
But
there's nothing that would prohibit a referendum.
No.
Okay. Back to the suing, because that. So what you said about this, the contract, the host community agreement. So we could put in that, or in an ordinance for anybody who sues for anything. If they sue our borough. Regarding
I'd leave that to the borough attorney. You mean anything
for
than cannabis business?
No, for cannabis. For cannabis.
I put it in there whether or not some judge at some point in time will say, that this is something that, should be severed and it's not legal. But I put it in all the time, yeah.
Would lawsuits against the municipality be subject to the New Jersey Tort Claims Act?
Cannabis? I need a perspective.
If they are, I think the resolution supports a discretionary activity. It's an immunity under the Tort Claims Act. I think that's what the presentation was pointing out, that the resolution support and the cases that you were talking about essentially say that there's wide latitude by the governing body, which sounded like a discretionary activity for which the municipality would have immunity.
But that wouldn't be a tort claim. That would be a prerogative.
Someone tried to make it. Yes.
You abused, you were arbitrary, you were capricious, you were unreasonable. It would be a prerogative writ. Not tort claims, I don't see that, but,
someone might, there's an infinite number of hypotheticals.
Yeah, I'm just thinking the municipal immunity.
I mean, you know, based on the information you've been sending me for 2 months, and the resident, I mean, it's a discretionary activity, so you'd have to prove a higher standard on a prerogative writ, and you'd have immunity in the Tort Claims Act. But what I think his point was, in these host community agreements, you could put an identification clause so that when some non-resident brings a frivolous lawsuit, the applicant would pay the legal fees, which is a great, idea.
Well, could we require along those lines a fund in advance? Because we're very small. We couldn't fund... it would be hard to fund a lawyer and then get reimbursed. Could we require a fund in advance to be held by an escrow?
Probably not.
I was going to say no. You could, you know, make your application fee $25,000 and take $24,000, put it somewhere.
Cool. That gives me other questions. You have a lot more experience in this idea. So there's a part of the CREAM Act that says that the costs of your application fees have to be reasonably related to the cost of their processing. But there's been a number of towns, I was actually recently just hired by a town to help them with some of the other applications. They're charging money that's not reasonable, like $25,000, $10,000. Has that been challenged at all yet?
So the folks that are paying the $25,000, it ain't the micro business.
No.
But are these multi-state operators that $25,000 to them is a nickel to me and you?
Yeah.
And they're not going to, they could care less.
Is that annually?
Yes. There's an application fee and a renewal. I've seen renewals for $25,000 every year.
Yeah, in a small town.
I mean, if you've got a big MSO in a big area, they will pay that with a blink of an eye. I'm not suggesting you do that. I don't live here.
Well, the question I have is whether they'll continue to pay it as the market progresses. Because everyone will pay the premium now to be the first people out there. But once you get to like the fifth or sixth one in the town, and it's, you know, more competitive like the liquor business, I can't imagine they don't lobby for a cap like the liquor businesses have on by statute.
We are
just a really, really interesting economic, legal kind of cross section.
We are building the plane as we are flying.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't doubt that years from now those challenges will come because they've got the money. Why should I have to pay more than the liquor store or the vape shop? But the argument is these are arm-length transactions. It was after the resolution of support. You guys are big boys and gals. You decided to take this route. So if I'm the judge, I'm going to say, what's the problem here? Now, if you did it before the resolution of support and you're sort of hanging that, that's a problem.
I have a question about you represent these municipalities in what capacity?
So it varies. I am the Cannabis Control Board attorney for Hoboken and Jersey City, and the other municipalities hire me to draft ordinances, host community agreements, that sort of thing.
So you're like the liaison between the cannabis industry in New Jersey and the municipalities? Sort of guide them.
He's the expert.
Yeah.
I read his emails to find out what's going on.
I'm not trying to take anything off your plate. I'm sure you're well equipped to handle the stuff we're talking about.
But, okay.
Yes, so that's my expertise.
So that is your.
I don't represent cannabis businesses other than my wife. She's got a micro cultivation. But I don't do that. I don't. There are many bigger firms that represent cannabis businesses and municipalities, and I think there's some
conflict. Right.
It's kind of hard to draft an ordinance when you represent a company that's paying you $1,250 an hour versus a municipality that may be paying you $275.
Maureen, we have a lot.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
On a quick question here, what is your experience with cultivators and manufacturers?
What do you mean on a questionnaire? You mean a survey?
No, he said he has a question.
No, as do you. Do you visit these places? Are they your clients, towns that have cultivation? You say Hightstown is one?
Going to
be one. Do you have other experience with it's only
a
year?
Secaucus has had, still has, a cultivation facility, and it stunk like hell.
Yeah. Well,
and we made them fix it.
Okay.
It's very expensive. You've seen them in the news.
Yeah.
One brother is sending money to Israel, whatever the case may be. But you make sure that the ordinance makes it crystal clear that if there's a problem, and quite frankly, I would educate your planning board, you know, to keep an eye on this stuff and send the guys in the white lab coats out there to measure the air, you know, after they...
So there's a reasonable amount of impetus on the town itself to police the situation.
Yes. And that's why you want the host community agreement, so the taxpayers are not paying for this policing.
And since we do not have our own police force...
Well, forget the police. They're not ever going to get involved with cannabis.
But the zoning officer...
Bingo.
Has got
You've
to
got
go
your own
there.
Zoning office, right, presumably.
Yeah, but then that person has to go there and be educated enough to do those instruments, a decibel meter for the fans.
You've got to hire an outside meter. Firm, and they have the cannabis business reimburses you.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyone else?
No. Mary Tellis, 21 Lake Drive. Did you say that land that is assessed for farming cannot be used for cannabis cultivation?
So if it is assessed as farmland, it cannot be. However, if there's a deed in preservation or an easement in preservation with the state, it can never be, although that's being discussed as we speak. If there is not a deed in a preservation or an easement in preservation with the state and you own that property, you are the farmer, and you decide not to submit your exemption to the tax assessor, your assessment goes away, and you can cultivate cannabis if you want.
But you pay the normal taxes on that property.
Bingo.
Right.
So a previous presentation, two out of the three farmers are on preserved farms. So what is then they are not they're not allowed to do?
If they decide not to...
No, there's a deed of preservation with the state. Okay. So they're out. Now, I'm going to several conferences where there are some attorneys, that's all they do, is that type of farmland work, and they said they're trying to get the state to change that because it makes no sense. Agriculture is agriculture, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so right now there have not been any preserved farms that...
Yes, that just leaves us the one farm.
That would leave, yes, the one farm that's not a preserve farm.
Right.
But they probably have farmland assessment, so they
have
to...
Oh, yeah, it's a farm. Yeah, it's a farm.
They have
Yeah, it's, I believe it's 30 acres they have.
So fundamentally, because they don't consider cannabis an agricultural product? They don't consider cannabis an agricultural product? That's super interesting.
And,
considering there are farmers that were paid to grow hemp, 2 summers ago, by the federal government.
Kansas.
I had this one, Sabalos Farm, where I live in Aberdeen, grew hemp 2 summers ago under the federal program. Interesting. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was just going to say, again, the property taxes go right back, but I'm guessing most of the owners could care less about the property taxes if they're growing cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, all three farmers are very interested in growing.
Two can't right now,
unless they let go.
If there are in-town neighbors that objected to it, could they sue?
As this woman said, anybody can sue. Whether or not they win and they have standing is another story.
Out-of-towners is another town. They should deal with their own town for stuff you said before.
Some of the litigation that I'm seeing, the judges are finding that you don't have standing. But if they are within 200 feet, planning board, zoning board, they do. Certainly at those regulatory bodies, they do.
But just to support to keep in mind, there's multiple municipal actions necessary to approve a cannabis business. You have the resolution of support for them to get their CRC, that's one level. Then you have the zoning, and to come back for a zoning permit, just like any other business. And then if you have a municipal licensing component, they have to satisfy that as well. So it's not necessarily one decision we're talking about. We have to three.
Yeah, I'll say that we should have a committee of all different parties, zoning board, planning board, council, farmers, school, to really discuss it and try to get all of this information to
out there
to a point that we can present it to the town. That's and again, we're going to run out of time if local people want to really start planting. It's they can do maybe 2 crops a year, I believe.
I think 4. If it's indoors, the cycle is 4. Yeah.
Outside is always better. But
it is a huge revenue generator. I am the zoning board attorney in Rochelle Park. We just got a check for $900,000. they're making $1.7 million a week. $1.7 a week. Now, that's going to drop off. It's on Route 17. There are thousands of cars that drive by there on an hourly basis.
Retail.
But it's going to drop off.
That's a retailer?
Yes.
Yeah. So where are their offices?
Okay.
Is that it? Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate the invitation. Nice to meet everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ron. Do you want to take some refreshments before you go?
Oh, let me unpack.
Okay. All right.
Excuse me. Will you be able to send that presentation?
You'll have to remind me because I will forget as soon as we walk out of here.
I'll remind you.
That's what
I'm doing. I do have some cards if you want to call me.
Okay. Yeah. So I just want to. It's about 7:56. So if we could move this along a little bit tonight, because Kathleen has the clerk's convention tomorrow morning. She has to drive to Atlantic City tonight after our meeting is over. So if we could try to make this a bit, if there's any real lengthy discussion about anything, if we could just try to keep it short, and then we could always continue it at our next meeting. So, our next presentation is the FDR Amphitheater Committee Update and Discussion. Connie, do you?
All right.
Okay.
So, the FDR Amphitheater Committee has made a selection of a consultant for the project after reviewing three proposals that we received from our request for proposals. The choice for consultant is ETM Associates, LLC, a landscape architecture firm specializing in public space design, public space management, and project management. The project will be overseen by the principal and owner, who is Timothy Marshall, and David Stittler, providing project management for all phases of the work. Though ETM Associates has over 20 years of experience, Timothy and David have worked together since 2008 over many projects. We had reported that we would be working towards a timeline for the Monmouth County Open Space Acquisition Fund grant proposal of September 15th. And we just learned in the last 2 weeks the timeline has been shortened to a deadline of July 15th, 2023. Therefore, we have a very aggressive schedule to meet. Our objective tonight is to update the council for this project, to answer any questions appropriate for this phase, and to have a contract prepared by the borough attorney in the next few days and sent out electronically in order to have a signed contract back by March 28th. This would allow for the resolution of acceptance to be prepared for approval for the next meeting on April 3rd. As you may remember, the Fund for Roosevelt is funding the soft costs for this project, and there are two representatives from the Fund for Roosevelt, Alan Malik and Gail Hutton, along with two council members, myself and Mike Hamilton, coordinating this project within a larger group. Since none of the proposals came in at the $50,000 amount that is being provided by the Fund for Roosevelt, I have asked Alan to come and discuss a solution for moving this project forward at this time and providing a perspective on the workings of the project of this type. So, Alan, can you take this part of it?
Alan Malik, 15 Pine Drive. Okay, I don't really have a great deal to add to what Connie said, but I'd just like to summarize the process we went through and why we're doing the project. I mean, we all know the amphitheater needs a lot of work. The lighting system is shot. The structure itself, the masonry structure, is crumbling, might be a little strong, but not terribly strong. The landscaping around it is somewhat sloppy, etc. Monmouth County has a matching grant program where they provide 50% of the cost for open space and recreation improvements for municipalities in the county. And, in fact, as Gail Hunton, who works for the Monmouth County Open Space System, has pointed out, Roosevelt is the only municipality in Monmouth County that has yet to receive any funds under this program. So, you know, we're certainly eligible. This is an eligible project, and it's long overdue given the condition of the amphitheater, which is a major facility for the community. So the Monmouth County funds can only be used for the actual construction. So the Fund for Roosevelt has committed from its funds an amount of $50,000 to cover the cost of architectural work and construction supervision. So we put together a request for proposals, which was reviewed by the borough attorney, and we assiduously tried to get it out to as many places and people as possible. We held a on-site pre-bid conference, which was attended by five firms, of whom three subsequently submitted proposals. This is actually, you know, quite a good outcome for a project of this nature. Of the three proposals, one had a price tag that was vastly in excess of anything that we could seriously consider, but two were at least within the ballpark. Both were qualified, but I think the committee felt that on balance, ETM, particularly because of the exceptional qualifications and experience with this kind of project of its principals, and a slight price difference, was preferable, though there's no question that the other firm was qualified to do the project. However, in addition, once we got the initial proposals, we reviewed them, we framed a variety of questions, and we sent a follow-up letter to the two firms asking questions and containing a discreetly worded suggestion that if they could see their way clear to reducing the price, that would be appreciated. Helped a little. The upshot is that, in both cases, the total cost from start to finish was over $50,000. So what the working group recommended to the full committee and what we recommend be the course of action is that at this point we contract with the firm for all work up to the point of awarding construction contracts and starting work. In other words, since we do not have certainty, we think the grant is highly likely, but we don't have certainty, it's prudent to do that and not to include the cost of construction supervision at this point. We've canvassed the board members of the Fund for Roosevelt, and they are willing, if and when we receive a grant and all funds are ready and in place to go forward with the work, to come up with the additional money for construction supervision. So the proposed amount for the contract at this point would be $49,900. And again, the Fund for Roosevelt will provide those funds to the borough so that the contract can be executed in good faith. And we would like to move forward. We think this would be a valuable project for the community and something that I don't think anybody could take exception to wanting the amphitheater and the monument and the FDR Memorial to be the best it can be for the community and for the people who use it. So, again, if there are any questions, I'm happy to try my best to answer them.
I think it's a win-win. I mean, that's what we want. We want the grant and we want...
Pardon?
We do want to rehab the amphitheater. It needs it desperately.
Yeah. This looks like a way to do it.
Yeah, an ideal situation. Does anyone have any questions?
I have a couple of logistical questions.
Sure.
So, professional services contract for a landscape architect by the 28th is a problem. You can do that and get that done. The resolution on April 3rd, though, So in order to award that contract to the landscape architect, the CFO has to be able to certify that the funds are available. So it would have to be like 2 weeks to get the donation over to the borough.
I've alerted our board treasurer to make the funds available.
Okay.
And sure. I am cautiously optimistic. The only hesitation I have is that we have typically kept a relatively small amount of cash and the rest of the balance in laddered CDs on a monthly basis. So I'm pretty confident that we'll be able to meet the deadline.
Okay.
But I'll check for sure.
That was the only snafu I saw in the timeline that Connie laid out.
So tell me again exactly what has to happen. Because it sounds like we were asking for, what do you need from us to do the contract?
George has to be able to certify that the funds to fulfill the contract that we award are available. So whether we enter into a donation agreement, essentially, with the fund for Roosevelt, and George funds it from the capital improvement fund to be replaced by that in a couple weeks or whatever, that's fine. Another way to do it is for them to just donate the money by April 3rd, and George signs the paper that the money's in the account.
I did speak to George Lang about that about 2 weeks ago. Right after our last meeting for the amphitheater committee. He's setting up a separate account. He probably has already set up that for flow-through for that money. So once that check is issued from the fund for Roosevelt to the borough, I guess he can certify that the funds are available.
Okay, great. That's perfect. So that was the only question I had in that process that was just laid out in terms of timing, if you want to get it done like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that it would – that the borough should invoice the fund for Roosevelt or provide some kind of a request for the funds just as for the paper purpose.
We have to coordinate with George because he's the one ultimately to provide Kathleen with the cert to make sure it happens on April 3rd.
Now, these funds you're talking about now are not for construction. This is all the pre-construction.
This is for design, for all of the design work as well as for the cost of the application to the State Historic Preservation Office because this is in a historic district and this was listed as a contributing facility originally, it has to be signed off by SHPO.
And then there would be another request for construction, hoping that half of it comes from the county at that point.
Well, it'll be paid for by the county once we fund it and complete the work. Then they would give us an agreement that they are going to fund the 50%. It's matching money.
So let's say you win the grant. This application's made. You guys win the grant. Right. They're going to give you a letter of award. Right. Then you're going to have to enter into a grant agreement. The grant agreement's going to say we're going to give you $250,000 and you have to match whatever you spend.
Right.
Then we have to pass a bond and build it. And then as we show them that it's completed, the person who's administering the project will submit paperwork to the county and they follow up on it because it's like a file at their office. They follow up on it.
Okay.
And there's other things, too. You're going to have to, which I'm going to get to in another second. There's another complication I want to go through with everybody. But you'll have to record stuff on the property and things like that to acknowledge the grant that it can only be used for certain purposes. And amongst the other requirements, then they send the money back. George puts it in the reserve account to pay the interest on the bond or the payments or the note. He pays it off. And, you guys go on your way. You got the money back.
It's deeded to the town as a lease for $1 for something.
Yes, that was the other complication I wanted to bring up. You're going to have to get the school district.
Yeah.
So technically, the school district owns the property that we're talking about.
So we need their some kind of a resolution of approval or something.
Here's what's going to happen. The county's going to go through your grant application and realize that the property is not owned by the town, and they're going to want the owners, or they're going to – I think they'll do it, but you should check into that. So I reviewed the lease, knowing we're going to talk about this. I reviewed the lease agreement we have. So we have a lease with the school district to maintain a memorial to FDR and such other appurtenances and things that may foster and enhance that memorial. So clearly this project is within the scope of what we leased the property for. There's no problem, no conflict in that regard. But we're going to have to record things against the property, and the school district's going to have to sign them because they're the deeded owner.
Right. Yeah.
So that should be part of – that's not today's problem. That's between now and the July deadline for the grant.
Right.
You'll have to get the site control aspects of the grant
And you should let the person who's doing this know as early as possible that I think it's Gail. Is it Gail?
Yeah.
Gail. That hurts you. Excellent. Wonderful. You should let Gail know that that's going to be, site control is going to have to be part of the grant application. And if you need a copy of the lease, I have it readily available.
Well, yeah, we have copies of the lease.
Oh, okay,
the original lease. But if there are any specific provisions that should be in that agreement.
Do you have the 1961 one?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's been an amended one?
Yeah.
That's expired?
That's what I thought, yeah. And that was just this past couple of years?
Yeah, it's very recent, and the school district signed off on it, and everything's still in place. And that it basically mirrors the terms of that, so neither is this project inconsistent with the new lease.
Yeah.
But I can provide you with a copy of that.
Okay, so do we need a new lease agreement, or do we simply need a rider, in essence, saying that we approve this project and we
I think you're going to need a resolution of the school board saying that they approve and consent to this on their property.
Right.
But the lease agreement we already have with them doesn't need to be changed. It already contemplates that we would do improvements like this.
Well, as far as I can tell, the lease agreement, the purpose of the initial lease agreement was in contemplation, was because at that point they were about ready to start constructing the original amphitheater and wanted to have this lease agreement in place.
And you know what I think? So, Kathleen, we're going to have to rely on you because I do not believe that I have the lease. I know what it says, the new one from June 2020. But I don't have a signed copy of it somewhere in the back.
Oh, okay.
But you guys will need a signed copy of that new lease to show what you got.
Yeah.
Michael?
And then I just have one. I'm sorry, go on.
You have a signed copy, Michael?
No, I don't have a signed copy. But one thing is that the commissioner... The school board has not yet gotten the consent of the Commissioner of Education, which is apparently needed to the extension of the lease, to the amendatory ordinance. So we're still waiting for that. I keep asking if that ever meeting.
That's State Board of Education.
So at this point, what we just have is the lease, which expires 2060.
The amended lease?
The amendments, as I said, the amendments were not the school before the school board president can sign it. He says he has to get the consent of the commissioner of education, and they're now in the process of trying to get this consent.
You're saying sign the lease that
sign the new ordinance,
amended
to amend, sign the resolution amending the lease.
Right.
So that it would be that we've had the council and the school board both approve the lease to become effective every 20 years if either party objects. However, for this to happen, we still need before the president of the school board will sign it. He says we need the and advise them we need the consent of.
That was my point, too, is that the title to the property is going to be
right.
A hurdle. So the earlier you start on making sure you have the right paperwork from the school district, the better.
So who has clout with the commissioner of education?
But you are.
I'm on the school board.
I think it's the county superintendent
so you're
that has to sign off on it. But the point is that you have to go over to the school board and talk to them about this. Because in order to get the proper paperwork signed for your grant application, you're going to have to deal with the school district. Whether it's that lease, whether they recognize the amended one, whatever it is, you're going to need their assent.
Yeah.
And they might need someone else's assent because they...
That raises an interesting question, whether for the school district to adopt an appropriate resolution approving this project and so forth. Pardon?
The school board is... Already adopted that resolution.
Yeah. But would that need the Commissioner of Education's approval to be official?
Just approving the project? No, I don't think
I wouldn't think so. I know there is specific language governing leases in the state education law. But hopefully not.
The Board of Education, that's not what I do, thank God, nowadays. And God bless those that serve over there. But my point is, you got to get on.
Right.
Because the school always it moves very, very fast.
So, Mike, how long have you guys been trying to move that along?
How long will it take to move it along?
No. How long has
about 33
have
months.
You been working on it?
Well, I've been working on it for quite a few months, trying to to move it along. And it finally, at the last, but 2 meetings ago, it was finally voted to, they finally decided to send it to the school board attorney for a review. And that it would then take it to the commission, they would get it to the commissioner of education.
So it really hasn't been in the works too long.
And that's already
been. Not to the commissioner yet, as far as I know.
Oh, so that's been 2 months after you have agreed.
Yeah, I've been trying to get that.
And no one is moving on it. I mean, we're talking about 3 months here.
Yeah.
Well, again, we don't, you know, since there is a lease in place already, the original lease, I don't think we need to get approval of the amendment in order to, for the school board to adopt a resolution of support of the project.
We said that the 2060 was far enough out that, but I think that under the terms of the grant that it needed 15 years or 20
yeah.
years.
I think, I think the 2060 will suffice. Yeah.
So the original lease is till 2060?
Yeah.
2060,
yeah. The lease, I just want to be honest, the lease isn't really the issue. The lease allows this.
Yeah.
The issue is you're going to have to record open space deeds of conservation on the school district's property. And so in order to do that, you're going to have to figure out how they do that.
Yeah.
I don't. They're sitting here. I don't know a lot of board of education attorney. I don't know 18A, but no. The board attorney over there will know. And without being able to record those deeds on the property, they're not going to give you the money for the grant.
Yeah.
So that's the earlier you get that figured out.
I don't think we have to have that in place, however, to file the application.
No, I think a resolution.
The resolution should
the
be
board
more
of
than
education
enough. Yeah.
Showing that they're in support of it, and then you could figure it out. But that
right.
sort of. I just wanted to put that in everyone's head right at the jump because. We're going to have to get someone else. It's not totally within our control. It's only my point.
Yeah.
If it's not in my control,
right.
tell everyone else to get it.
I remember Gail saying it was somewhat informal as far as the grant application
yes.
process, that you just need to show that you have control of the property
right.
In which this is going to be built.
Yeah, right. exactly.
Which that may be sufficient for the grant application.
Right.
I think so.
It's later on we get into trouble.
Yeah.
So if it moves along.
Yeah, I think we can get to this. I don't think getting to this part is any problem.
Right.
I'm just pointing out, you know, we don't always be on a 3 month deadline, right?
Yeah.
So, and the only other thing I wanted to point out to you guys is that, so you're bringing it up to the design phase functionally, right?
Yeah.
Not the administration phase. So you just want to make sure that one ETM has experience with county grants for which they have to submit these requirements on a periodic basis or we'll get the money.
Yeah.
They'll talk to Tim. So they're all good with that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then number two, just know that fundamentally someone else isn't going to come in really and administer someone else's design. So you're really locked into ETM the whole way.
Oh, yes. That's clearly understood.
Okay, you guys.
Yeah.
That was all I had.
Yeah.
Just wanted to try to lay it out for you.
But doesn't that have to be in the contract that you do?
Well, it would just simply be for design and grant application.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
why don't you have some sort of a footnote so that they know it's coming? And I don't know if they need that commitment, but I would think they would like it. And we would like it to know that that's what's going to happen. So,
well, I mean, you could certainly tell them that, but if it takes 2 years to get the grant and half the people here aren't here anymore, I don't think you can make that guarantee.
No.
We are not. From a strictly legal standpoint, we are not bound to award them the construction supervision contract. However, we have made it clear to them and to ourselves that this is what we plan to
do. It's going to be very hard to get someone else to do it in
exactly.
any event.
Exactly.
They're not going to
want to administer
someone else's plan. So I think they, you know, I think they assume they get the whole project, which
would
if I was in their shoes.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
It would be stupid
I'll work
on our
on
part
step
to do
one
anything
and two,
different.
And you guys will continue
do
to coordinate
you need
with
anything from...
The proposal, which I think Connie already sent to you and you sent to me.
I know Anna.
Three. Anna, someone, I think someone, Connie sent an email that had a PDF attached and that was forwarded to me.
Okay. And there
just double check to make sure I have it. That's why I bring my computer.
There's a second one, you know, that came after. There was a revision, and that was around March 8th. Anna sent it to me. March 8th. So on that one, I don't know how fine you want to get.
Well, you want to take the scope scope of services for the contract.
Yeah, I mean, the contract that I'm putting together functionally has all of the local public contracts law requirements. Like, this is a non-fair and open award, so it's got to be published in the newspaper. They have to fill out disclosures. They have to fill out their investment activities in Iran, investment activities in Ukraine, all that sort of stuff. And then really it says, you know, for professional landscape architecture services, as per the proposal, it's attached as Exhibit A. So, like, then I just put the proposal on the contract. It's got all the public stuff on the top.
Exactly.
There's scope of work on the back, and that's sufficient. Mm-hmm. And then Kathleen knows very well how to run through all the contracts.
Well, you should make sure you have the revised.
I do not have that as well.
Yeah, because
I searched for that.
Because after we sent them the clarification letter, they sent us a revised version that.
Need revised. And I'm going to put
the differences are not large, but they're something.
On a question, if everything goes smooth with all of this, get to construction, well, what time, when would there be a new amphitheater? Just roughly.
Well,
as soon as you vote for it, Jeff.
The one thing I don't know is, assuming we get the grant application in on time, how long it's going to take before we hear from the county and do the necessary paperwork to create the bond. That, let's say it's 6 months. I would think it should be less, but let's say worst case. Yeah. So we get the application in mid-July. We hear in the fall. We put the bond together. We're ready to start construction, depending on the weather, early in the year. We are estimating a 4-month construction period. But let's see, the range could be 3 to 6 months. So if everything works out well, and I've done enough construction projects to know that never happens. It never works out. There's something always goes wrong, usually more than once. But if everything goes well, we could potentially have next year's, the 2024 graduation in the new amphitheater. But no promises.
Yeah, I wouldn't make any promises.
No promises.
Crossed,
yes, okay. Good.
Yeah. Michael, we really need, can this wait?
I just want to say, just make sure that whoever's going to prepare the document that needs to be approved by the school board to get it to me so I can get it to put it on the board agenda. That's all.
And who is that does that?
Well, I mean, we need to figure out what. We need to work with Gail and the people who are preparing the grant to find out what Monmouth County might require. It might just be attaching the lease. Yep. If you need a resolution, then it'll be the board will just prepare that and give it to us.
Okay. Any other questions for Alan or comments? All
right. No.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Very cool.
Yeah. I have.
I think we should have a council meeting there when it's done. That's neither here nor there.
No, please do.
I think we should have a council meeting there when we're done.
You know what?
Microphones. Just go to the bottom of the amphitheater.
It's lovely now, even as dilapidated it is. Don't you think it's kind of charming and lovely? It just means.
In its own way.
It's a little dangerous, but.
It's patina. Yeah.
Okay, I have a proclamation to issue. It's the marking of the 90th anniversary of the inauguration of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which was March 4th, 2023. That was the 90th anniversary. Whereas March 4th, 2023 marked the 90th anniversary of the inauguration of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and whereas President Roosevelt, having taken office in the midst of the Great Depression, promised a new deal of social and economic reform to the American people, and whereas President Roosevelt began his administration with an outpouring of legislation designed to correct problems that had led to the great hardship being experienced by most Americans, and whereas one of the most significant legislative proposals was the one that was signed into law on June 16, 1933, as the National Industrial Recovery Act, and whereas Section 208 of the National Industrial Recovery Act provided as follows. Section 208, to provide for aiding the redistribution of the overbalance of population in industrial centers, $25 million is hereby made available to the President to be used by him through such agencies as he may establish and under such regulations as he may make for making loans for and otherwise aiding in the purchase of subsistence homesteads. The monies collected as repayment of said loans shall constitute a revolving fund to be administered as directed by the President for the purposes of this section. Whereas the initiative of Benjamin Brown and his associates, an application for funding under Section 208 was submitted to the recently created Division of Subsistence Homesteads in the Department of Interior, headed by M.L. Wilson, and whereas the approval by Wilson of Brown's proposal for an agro-industrial Jewish cooperative subsistence homesteads community helped to lay the groundwork for the establishment of this community. Therefore, I, Peggy Malkin, Mayor of the Borough of Roosevelt and the Borough Council, hereby call upon all citizens of Roosevelt to join us in commemorating the 90th anniversary of President Roosevelt's inauguration as marking the initiation of the process leading to the creation of this New Deal community. Dated this 20th day of March, 2023, Mayor Peggy Malkin.
Here, here.
Thank you, FDR, and his entire team.
New Deal team.
Yeah. All right, we come to public comment on agenda items only. I'm going to open the floor at 8:28 p.m. Anyone from the public?
Hi, Maureen Parrott, 2 Tamara Drive. At that long presentation is on the cultivation. What's the very first step the municipality has to take if we want to? Is it?
The governing body would have to vote to opt back in.
So
we're not back in because we were never in, to opt
in. It wouldn't be the planning board or zoning. It would be this body opting in.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. That's, and then the second point is, if you decide to have a committee that's going to look at this from the, including the public, I would urge you to put people on it. There are equal number who've expressed opposition. Right. Equal number that have expressed favor.
Yeah,
in favor.
Well balanced.
Okay, yeah, because right. There are people that have actually expressed it, and that it be advertised and all the meetings be open to the public. If that's what you're going to do, that's all. And I don't even know if that's something you're really looking at, because that would take a lot of time. But anyway, thank you.
Piggyback off of that, I know Kathleen's got to go, so I just want to real quick. So you heard him say, "Building a plane like you're flying it," right? So if you wanted to go from opting out to opting in, and you heard him, you can't. It's like a ratcheting system where you can't make it more restrictive again. You know, in my, and this is, I preach what I practice. You know, I guess I practice what I preach. So in Aberdeen, we opted in, but only in a place where you really couldn't do it. And so now that we're, but we showed that the door is cracked open, right? And then this is a private market, so we've been getting calls from a bunch of people. And some of them are good ideas and some of them are bad ideas. And we're kind of getting our feel for the market before we do an ordinance to completely opt back into a certain area of town or otherwise. So that's also an option as well.
Say that again? So you opted in, but for a section?
So we passed an ordinance that allows cannabis businesses near our railroad, near the train station in Aberdeen, where no residents really live, and where there's really not. There's a few places that it would take substantial investment to do it. So it practically exists in my hometown, and where I'm a councilman, by the way, for those who don't know. But it's not really viable, just as a matter of course, people filing things or litigation to make it happen, if that makes sense. Because you know what I do for a living, and so in my council, I was like, I don't know what this plane looks like. We're going to build it while we fly it. Let's just not ban it so that people know that we're open to it, and then they're going to come to us with the ideas and the properties in the town that it might work, and then we can open the door as far as we want to or keep it closed. So that was another option. I know that presentation was excellent in terms of, like, all the parameters of what everyone knows about it right now, but even right now we're still building the plane as we're flying it, and that was something that my hometown was very wary of. And so we just cracked the door open a little bit, and if people come with a good idea, they just know we're not opposed to it.
because they go down the list of towns, who opted in, who opted out, and they start making their phone calls for business purposes with the realtors. And so we're probably going to end up with a couple of cannabis businesses in Aberdeen, in places on the highway commercial district that aren't near houses or near the industrial area, just like he was talking about. And that's how we did it. We'll change the ordinance when it's time, when we see the good idea as we see it, if that makes sense. So without trying to anticipate the end part by just opting wholly back in, you could just put it in a place where maybe it might not work, but you let people know that you're in the game, and then they'll find you. Believe me, they'll find you.
We've gotten many requests.
Yes.
Since there's only a couple of places that it could be, is it that the owners of those properties have to be the ones that get the licenses?
You have to show site control to get the license. So you have to have a lease, an option to purchase, or actually own the property when you go to the CRC.
Right, right. So could we say, let's crack the door, but how do you do that here?
Well, we go and talk to Michelle and the planner at the planning board, and we say, in Aberdeen, we're like, where do you think this will work? And they point to light industrial zones, and we're like, well, we don't want it there because it's going to upset people if they think it's coming in their neighborhood, even though it might end up there. If the place is right and the size is right and all that sort of stuff. And so then we put it in a place where really no one would care if someone found some way to do it.
Yeah.
But really it wasn't, the door wasn't wide open where people, you know, there's other towns you can read about that were like, well, I put it in the highway commercial district. Well, they got 52 applications for every property, every tire shop that's not doing well, everything up and down the street. And so I didn't personally think that. And like I said, this isn't something I didn't do where I live, right? My notion when I sold by a fellow townspeople on was like, just crack the door open, let them know we're not opposed to it, and then when they find the property, they're going to come to us and ask us to change the ordinance if it's this ratcheting system.
So for here, it would have to come from the planning board first?
Well, I'm just saying that you guys know every inch of the town. You would know what, you take a zoning map, you look at it, and you know what properties. Just like in my town, I know every property, the train station.
It's either the farms or it's the factory.
We can't have retail.
Right, but also if you put you, but like here's a question: it's not just zone, right? What about the size of the lot? So one of the things in Aberdeen is the zone is perfectly appropriate, and you could find it. But we made the lot size big enough where there's only like really one or two places where you could put it, and you'd have to put a lot of money into those properties. But then we get calls anyway for places that we never even put in our ordinance. Hey, I want to put it on this old shopping center on 35 and fix the entire thing. All right, well maybe we'll consider that in that particular area. Or maybe we'll help you, to give you our resolution support to go to the land use board, and then you take your chances over there with those guys. But, in the place where everyone should be heard, and the public's going to be heard. So, I'm saying there's more ways to do it than just blanketly putting in a huge ordinance that tries to anticipate everywhere where we go. I just want to give you that option as you guys think about it.
You can regulate it through zoning, in other words.
Yeah, and because it's a ratcheting system, once you go and allow it in a bunch of places, then you can't bring it back in. That was the fear in our town. Because there's a lot of properties that you could do. Like there's a Krausers in the middle of a huge residential neighborhood, and if you said, but it's zoned differently, so we allowed it in every one of those zones. We could have had it in the middle of a residential neighborhood with nothing else around it. That wasn't the result we were looking for.
One of the interesting things that came up during his presentation was testing. Now, there's hardly any or no revenue through that, but we have an ideal site for it.
Yes,
where the abandoned gas station is. If we wanted to get a rateable in. Apparently, there's a need for it. You need testing facilities. Not everybody's going out and saying, we want a testing facility, but we don't want any of the other revenue. But we have properties, and we can get revenue out of that property and possibly get a lab there. I think it would be a good location for it.
There's a lot of caveats at the gas station, because of all the toxicity that was there. But
It's capped, and it was remediated.
Yeah, I know it can never be a nursery of either kind, children or plants.
But testing.
Yeah, testing. And the foundation can't be. I'd wanted to bring that up soon because it's turning into like a secondary eyesore.
Yeah.
We finally got the building down, but now it's been like 4 years, and so I know the foundation can't be disturbed, and there's no water sewer there, which I had spoken to our engineer a couple of years ago, and she said she didn't think it was going to be prohibitive to run the water sewer there, and also I had spoken to our CFO, who said he didn't think it would be a problem either with securing whatever we needed to do that. But, yeah, that would be, especially because something like that wouldn't take as much as many parking spaces,
right.
Just the employees, right?
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot to think about. That's why I brought Ron in, because I've been hearing about him from all the other towns. He's made many presentations. I was honestly pretty shocked about Hightstown opting in, but you know, he's made all these presentations, and so I thought he could give us a, you know, a window into what we would need to do if we either continue to do by opting out or if we wanted to opt in. So. Okay.
Wait, we're still in public.
Yeah, we're still in public. I know, Mary.
Just very, very quick on that topic. Mary Tullis, 21 Lake Drive. He mentioned a micro business, but I didn't understand from him what exactly that was.
I think, isn't that just people individually?
So micro business is essential part of the CREAM Act, the Cannabis Regulatory Enforcement, and something with an A that I can't remember, Modernization Act. part of the CREAM Act is making sure that everyone has an opportunity to participate in this new market. So obviously, you know, the craft foods of cannabis are here in New Jersey trying to set up these facilities. MSOs, which are multi-state organizations, if you heard that term. Mm-hmm. The people who are selling in California and Denver, they, you know, like I said, you know, they didn't want everyone trying to go out and start a hot dog stand to compete against craft, right? Because that wouldn't be fair to New Jersey residents because we knew the market existed elsewhere and out-of-state operators are just coming to take all the business. So a micro business is a business that, I believe it's a cultivator that's 5,000 square feet or less, or a retail store that's 2,500 square feet or less. I mean, you can compare like Zen Leaf and Neptune, which is a 12,000-foot store. And so it's really for your mom-and-pop cannabis business. And all of the licensing fees, the requirements like, you know, no felonies, no criminal record, all the screening stuff still applies to those people. But the exorbitant fees that the CRC and towns are charging are not applicable to them. They pay 10% of the licensing fees. Like, so it's $100,000 to put a licensing application in for a cultivator of 100,000 square feet or more. But it's only $1,000 to do it for a micro business. So the
that
idea
might be a good option for us, if yeah. you know, especially in terms of cultivation for less land, fewer yeah. greenhouses, or however that would work out. So then I guess the revenue coming to the town is also reduced.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, but it could be a way to, if people want to go that way, it could be a way to start out and see what all the
right.
benefits.
There's
and
a lot of people that
are
doing that, and then there's people, and it was a way to get people into the market that otherwise would be able to make those hurdles into it. You know, like you know, ordinary people of New Jersey, and you know, what, and like he said, if they're going to study the demand versus the supply, I think after 7 years, and then if you have one of those licenses, you may be able to just go convert to an annual license if the demand exceeds the supply.
And under that classification, is that someone who could grow it in their backyard? A micro?
No. I mean, no.
Because you are allowed to do that now, right?
No.
No?
People, individuals are not allowed to grow cannabis.
Oh, I thought they were. Okay.
So you have to have a license. So it's really no different than moonshine in your backyard.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
No one's probably going to tell on you, but it's definitely illegal.
Okay, thank you.
You are able to make a certain amount of liquor every year, I believe.
Yes, and so the people were very upset that the CREAM Act did not include an exception for that, because most other states have 4 plants or less, which is not a commercially sustainable operation.
Yeah, that's what I did think we had here.
I don't believe that there was an amendment talked about, but I don't think it ever went through.
Not there.
Anyone else in the public like to speak? Okay, I'm going to close public.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Ben. I didn't notice that you had your hand up.
Ben Johnson, 36 Pine Drive. That's really a question. Since this seems to be such a fluid legal situation with cannabis, if it becomes federally legal in a couple of years or thereabouts, what happens, if anything, to the 2% fee structure? Anything? Or
they'll probably be able to pay us by check instead of bringing a suitcase to the front desk. the biggest problem these businesses have with the federal and state dichotomy is twofold. One, money, because if you're a federal bank, if you're not a community bank, then you basically can't take the money. And then two, is the, you know, if the federal government goes in a direction or the president is elected who tells the DOJ to enforce the federal cannabis laws again, which have essentially not been enforced since Obama was the president, then they could come to any cannabis business within 1,000 feet of a playground, school, for all your traditional drug-free zones and just arrest everybody.
and that's the main fear for these operators. But almost every cannabis license ordinance that certainly one of everyone that I've written, and most that I've seen in other towns that other people have written, have the same. They basically incorporate the language of the Drug Free Act of 1988, which is 1,000 feet and 250 feet, so that when the federal, if the federal government ever decided to do that, they wouldn't be within that those boundaries. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the DEA can theoretically come into any of these places anytime they want.
So financially, there would be no impact. We're talking about just regulatory matters, and procedural things.
As far as the the tax revenue is going to, it's a state tax, so the federal government doesn't really have the power over that.
Okay.
So the tax revenue would remain. It's just a matter of, you know, which direction the federal government goes today.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
thanks. Thank you. Okay, anyone else? I'm going to close the public portion at 8:42 p.m. Okay, so if we could just sort of run through this as quickly as possible.
Don't worry about it.
All right. I'm good. Okay, so minutes. Do I have a motion to approve regular meeting minutes of February 6, 2023?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. The meetings have been, the minutes have been adopted from February 6th. Now we come to regular meeting minutes of February 21st, 2023. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? Roll call?
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Abstain.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. And so the meeting minutes of February 21st, 2023 have been adopted. Correspondence, we have a resolution from the Environmental Commission regarding recognizing Arbor Day, which is, when, Ellen? 22nd, right? The Earth Day, yeah, April 22nd, 2023. And a resolution from the Environmental Commission regarding sustainable land use pledge.
So my understanding is the Environmental Commission passed those resolutions and they would like Council to also adopt them. Would you want to discuss that now or
can we table that to April 3rd? Does there anyone have any objection to that?
Does that affect any of our grants?
It will affect our application to the sustainability.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we can just accept it.
Except then I can put it on the agenda for the 4-3 meeting?
Yeah, would that be sufficient?
Okay. There's no objection to recognizing Arbor Day right now.
you never know.
Those pesky trees.
Sure, I forgot where I am.
Sorry.
So, okay.
Okay, so I'll put them on for the 4-3 agenda.
Okay. Come to ordinances. We have the second reading of Ordinance 2023-01, an ordinance repealing and replacing current code section 12-5, registration and maintenance of vacant and abandoned residential properties in foreclosure, with new code section 12-5, vacant and foreclosed properties registration within chapter 12, property maintenance of the borough's revised general ordinances to update regulations pertaining to vacant properties within the borough to comport with newly adopted state law.
Okay, so this is the public
hearing
time.
Yeah. So don't we need to
first
do the public?
To,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to open public comment at 8:45 p.m. Is there anyone who would like to comment on this ordinance? Okay, being none, I'm going to close public portion at 8:45. Roll call.
Okay, so you want to do a motion to adopt first?
Yeah, that would help. Do I have a motion to adopt?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second it.
I could do roll call.
Yeah, I could do roll call. Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hurdstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, Ordinance 2023-01 has been adopted. Consent agenda resolutions. We have Resolution 23-40, payment of bills for March 20th, 2023. Resolution 23-41, authorizing transfer of appropriations for 2022. And Resolution 23-42, authorizing temporary emergency appropriations. Do I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda resolutions?
I'll so move.
Second?
I have some questions about some things. On the bills list, there's an item for flagpoles, $485. What was that for?
I honestly...
Does anybody know?
I'm imagining it must have come at the request of Greg DeVoe or Anna or Steve or I don't know.
To replace our existing flagpoles because there's...
I really don't know.
Do you remember? Was it a public works item?
I don't know. We never discussed it here at the table, so I'm not really sure.
I don't mean to hold things up because I know we're kind of trying to move it along.
We just texted Anna.
$485.16. Okay, is there anything else?
Do you want to remove that from the bill list?
We can pull it since we have some questions on it. If it's not... I mean, it's $485.
Is it? For how many flagpoles?
Four.
We have
four flags. And we also have four poles. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
If it's new ones for here, could be. I don't know. I'm waiting.
Four poles?
Yeah.
We have four flags here?
Right here.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys. Okay. Yeah. Not outside flagpoles.
So no. Okay. If we could just pull that.
You want to pull that?
Yeah.
It looks like they're indoor poles.
Yeah, I saw Greg walking around.
Definitely be the ones behind
today.
You.
Yeah, that's the question I have. That's all.
It could be they're difficult to. Oh, here we go. Four new flagpoles for the council room. The current ones are one silver, one gold, one white, and one wood. The new ones will be all heavy-duty silver so they don't topple over, which the current ones do topple.
I don't see that, but it's not.
Well, maybe they haven't toppled while we were here.
Well, to me, it sounds like it's a reimbursement, so it already...
Yeah, Anna paid for it already, so we don't want to hold up Anna's reimbursement, certainly. No, let it go.
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion of the consent agenda? Okay. Roll call.
Thank her.
Yes. It's her bedtime.
Were the other two resolutions? Everybody still good with the first and the second?
Yep.
Okay. Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hurdstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Consent agenda resolutions are adopted or passed. Reports of committee chairs. Can we do the Evelyn Wood version of the committee reports?
So, hoping to get the committee for the speed bumps together soon. So working on it.
Okay. Councilmember Esikoff is absent tonight. Councilmember Hamilton, finance.
We're still waiting for George Lang's response to the request that we put through for a meeting. We want to look at projects that are upcoming and try to figure out how we're going to pay for them and what the rates are going to be like for the bonds or whatever funding instruments. I also had a question that I sent to to George Lang this week about, in light of all the banking issues that we've heard, and we have our funds in a local community bank. And so I just had questions about the solvency and how are we protected. The answer that came back is we're protected up to $250,000 like a regular depositor would be. And then above that, we're protected by the GUDPA, Governmental Unit Deposit Protection Act, which is a New Jersey Protection Act. It's required for New Jersey depositories. They have to protect and guarantee funding for municipalities or schools that have funding in their institutions. So they can't accept municipal money or school money unless they guarantee above that $250,000 for the funds. So it appears at first glance that we are protected. So in case there's questions about that, if you're watching the news with the insolvency of some of the smaller community banks and that kind of thing, it appears that we don't have to worry about that. End of report.
Mike, when you meet with him, can you also bring up the gas station as far as... I think he would have to consult with Carmella, but, you know, we need to revisit what it would cost us to install water sewer there. Thanks.
Well, okay, would the testing facility need that?
Well,
if they have a bathroom.
You could put that in the agreement with them.
Yeah, that they need to
that
pay
they
for
need
it.
To,
right, of
to
course.
Pay for that,
yeah.
For the hookup
yeah.
and the
I'm just
installation
curious
utilities.
If they, you know, I just want to have a general idea of what it would cost either us or someone else.
I think Carmella said
she's at the time Carmella said between 80 and 100,
yeah.
But that was a few years ago. So I don't know if that's remained stable or it's much more money now. I haven't, yeah.
Yeah,
I asked her about 2 years ago. But George, when I did discuss it with them, George at the time, so before all our sewer issues and everything at the time, said he didn't think it would be a problem securing that money.
So, Peggy, wasn't there bathrooms and water at the gas station before?
No.
Well and sewer.
No.
Never.
Well and septic.
Yeah. Well and septic. No. Mm-hmm. No. And
right, and they couldn't do that.
Well, it's
again.
I don't. It's there's a lot of issues with the foundation can't be disturbed.
It's capped.
But the well and septic were outside of the foundation.
Could you go take a drink?
Yeah.
I'll meet you over there.
Yeah, so there was a problem. There's also a pollution problem.
There's a lot of restrictions. Yeah, there's a lot of restrictions of what can't go there because of how toxic it was for so many years with all the oil in the ground and gasoline. And so it's, I don't know, a lot, but there's a few restrictions.
The brownfields.
Yeah, it's gross. So. Okay, Councilmember Hurstrom, Community Development.
Yes, we are moving forward with some meetings on the Roosevelt Senior Group. We're making progress. Hopefully, I'll have more to report.
Good. Okay, great. Councilmember Mocker, Public Works.
I guess our only big news is we've got a roof over our generator up at the water treatment plant.
Great.
Good. So,
good.
That's it.
Good. And Councilmember Trammell, Utilities.
We know that T-Mobile is still working up under the water tower, and they continuously leave their lock unlocked. So every time I drive by, I lock their lock. So any of our public works people, when they go by the water tower, should check that the locks are locked on the gate there so nobody can get in. That would be a...
Who leaves it unlocked? Their own workers?
I have talked to these guys. I've talked to Anna. I've locked the lock. And,
okay.
It's been weeks now. It's been unlocked, and I lock it all the time. So any of us, if we're there, just nobody's there, lock the lock. You know.
Okay.
We had a couple of effluent pumps go down at the sewer plant, and they were pumping the liquid from the trickling filters over to the final clarifiers, and it, in fact, the pumps went down, so there was some liquid that escaped into the aquifer. Mike Lyons did a self, he called it in, and the guys went and fixed it. The pumps will have to be repaired or replaced at the cost of last time around, 3 years ago, was around $8,000 per pump. So there's two of them. We'll see if they can be repaired or if they got to be replaced.
We need that cannabis money.
That's basically it. Yeah. So the guys are on top of things, and we like that. So.
Thanks, Chair. I think we lost Michael. Ellen, is there anything you wanted to report as environmental chair?
Ellen Silverman in North Valley. Do you want to plant a pitch pine or do you want to plant a birch?
I would say a birch because we have lots of pines here, so maybe a birch might be
okay.
A nice change.
That's only one of our things that are going on April 22nd, which is Earth Day Arbor Day. And we're going
Arbor
to have...
Arbor Day used to be in June. Did they combine it with Earth Day?
No.
There's always on Earth Day?
There's a lot of things to celebrate in June, but
okay.
Earth Day is always
okay.
In April.
Stand corrected.
And we have a stream cleanup, and please, if you would like to join, we're doing this with the Watershed Institute, so go on the Watershed Institute, sign up, and you're going to get a little sapling, seedling, whatever a baby tree is, and bring your whole family so you can start your own forest.
If you come to the I don't want to take up any more time, but I do have some questions about our Green Acre, so next meeting, if you come, I'll ask you.
Okay.
Okay? Because I don't want to take any more time.
I just wanted to add, because, Ellen, you didn't mention it, we're going back to live meetings.
That is correct.
Yeah. Environmental Commission's going back to live meetings, so if you see cars here on the... on that...
And yelling and stuff, yeah. You'll know it's the Environmental Commission.
Thank you, Ellen. Okay, does anyone mind if we table unfinished business about the ordinance revision until the next meeting?
It shall remain unfinished.
Right, exactly.
Well, I will. Greg did review it tonight, so it can be on the next agenda for introduction, or would you prefer under discussion? Discussion.
I prefer discussion.
Okay.
All right. New business. We have Clean Communities Cleanup Day, April 1st, 2023, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. I encourage everyone to join in. And bulk trash pickup this spring will be May 1st, 2023. It used to be known as Big Trash Day, but now it's bulk trash.
I want to comment on new business here. The neighbors over on Cedar Court have been complaining about the odor.
The odor, yeah.
So who was responsible after this fire to clean the debris?
They have put their permit in.
Yeah, I read that, too.
I don't know what the time frame on
when that happened. Except to the owners and the...
Because it'll become a health issue. There's a lot of cats in there. So, yeah.
He put a demolition permit in with the construction department.
Okay.
The owner.
Okay.
So depending on that timeline.
Yeah, what kind of timing, Greg?
As soon as he writes a check to the guy with the, if the permit's been approved?
I don't know. I just know he put in a
permit approved, and you usually pay three quarters up front, quarter at the end. And sit with the demolition guy.
So it should be imminent.
Hopefully.
Legally. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And
seems to be a clear-cut insurance claim to me.
Yeah.
And it is possible to just demolish the one side, huh? The one house?
I hope so.
It was very odd the way it was written in all the media. I don't know if this is Gen Z and they never heard of a twin or a semi-detached house. Or they kept saying it was one house that shared a common wall that was divided. Like they didn't understand. It's two separate houses.
Right.
But it was very odd the way they wrote it. But I know that the house next door has been... deemed structurally unsound, so
right.
I don't know. But.
Okay, and the only other thing would be at the last meeting you said you were going to send a letter to the fire departments, a proclamation?
Yeah, but I said that not yet because there's too much else going on.
So
I haven't done that yet,
okay.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Where are we? Oh.
Public comment.
Right. So I'm going to open the floor to public comment at 9:01 p.m. Anyone from the public have anything at all they'd like to say or ask? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close it at 9:01. Do we need to have a closed session? No. Okay, so just lost my whole train of thought. Oh, just want to remind everyone, our next meeting is April 3rd. Let's hope we have a very calm, easy next 2 weeks till our next meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
To adjourn.
To adjourn? Oh, God.
Also move.
Second?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, meeting is adjourned at 9:02. Did you know that that's fine?
Hold on, let me call you.